Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Like the national unemployment rate, Rhode Island's jobless rate rose slightly in May. Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick has the latest numbers.
Rhode Island's unemployment rate rose to 8.9% in May, up 0.1 percentage point from the April rate. It was the first month-over-month increase in the state's jobless rate in almost 2 years. The number of unemployed Rhode Islanders, those classified as available for and actively seeking work, was 49,600. That's up 200 from the April figure. Over the year, however, the number of unemployed has fallen by almost 10,000. The education sector took the biggest hit, shedding 1,100 jobs due to larger-than-usual employment losses at colleges and universities. Also reporting job losses were professional and business services, healthcare, and manufacturing. Employment in five other sectors, construction, financial activities, government, information, and mining and logging, was unchanged. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Rating agency Standard & Poor's will not change its rating on Rhode Island's bonds for the now bankrupt gaming company 38 Studios. This despite the fact that lawmakers are considering a default on the 38 Studios debt. Standard & Poor's says that discussion has no effect on the bond's A rating, according to Reuters. The agency also says it will not downgrade Rhode Island's other bonds, even though Moody's, another rating agency, has signaled it may do so. The vacant Superman building is in the running to house state workers for the Executive Office of Health and Human Services. The building's owner, High Rock Development, has submitted a bid for a state contract looking for between 70,000 and 80,000 square feet in office space. High Rock spokesman Bill Fisher says the developer still hopes to convert the Superman building into residential space, but Fisher says High Rock will need some financial help from the state and the city for renovations if the Superman building is chosen for state office space. It's unclear when the state will pick the winner of its search for a new office space for Health and Human Services. Emotional testimony from the relatives of shooting victims yesterday in the ongoing trial of alleged Boston gang leader James Whitey Bulger. Asma Khalid has been following the trial at the federal courthouse in Boston.
For the second day in a row, the jury will have the chance to hear friends and family members recount the loss of their loved ones. Diane Sussman Detenin was in a car that was mistakenly riddled with bullets by Bulger's crew. Her voice broke yesterday in court as she told the jury how she crouched down in the car to avoid being killed the night one of Bulger's alleged victims was murdered. Her story moved one juror to tears. That sort of emotional testimony continues today as jurors will hear from more family members. They'll also hear from two gun experts and Frank Capizzi, who was shot in 1973, allegedly because of a gang rivalry with Bulger's group.
That's Asma Khalid reporting from Boston. And New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez was with semi-pro football player Odin Lloyd on the morning before Lloyd was shot to death. According to the Boston Globe, police have found surveillance video of the two together in Dorchester early Monday morning. Lloyd's body was found later just a mile from Hernandez's home in North Attleboro. Police tell the Globe Hernandez has not been cooperating with their investigation. The star Patriots player now also has other legal problems. He was named yesterday in a lawsuit from a Florida man who claims Hernandez shot him in the face after the two had an argument at a strip club.
Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley is away this week. Filling in for her is a Providence-based reporter for the Associated Press, David Klepper. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
The budget passed this week by the House Finance Committee avoids any new broad-based taxes or fees, but the spending plan is also being criticized for reducing an increase in aid for Rhode Island's struggling cities and towns. David, what is your sense of how well this budget positions Rhode Island for the future, and what jumps out at you as being most notable about the budget?
Well, by my calculations, this budget proposal cuts about $15 million from Governor Chafee's original proposal to go to those cities and towns. Governor Chafee, being a former mayor, is very conscious of the struggles that our cities and towns have been going through. The legislature says, however, that they had a $30 million hole that they had to fill, and they found other ways to help cities and towns finance road projects. So I think that's going to be one of the critical components of this debate, is how do we help these struggling cities and towns like Providence, like Pawtucket, like Woonsocket. Of course, the other big issue, the 38 Studios bonds.
Right, of course, and we'll talk about that shortly. Scott, the budget includes about $6 million in new higher education spending, about $30 million more for K-12 education. How do you evaluate this budget?
I think the K-12 money is actually a forward move. Now, the colleges, the $6 million, that really isn't much given their needs. I think the biggest problem is something that Mr. Klepper touched on, which is the aid to cities and towns. This could, some people close to Governor Chafee say, push Woonsocket, for instance, which is teetering on the brink now, into a Central Falls-style receivership, and that would not be good for Woonsocket. You know, as we know, it's a city that does not have a whole lot of economic resources and doesn't have a lot of business to help with its tax base. So I think there's a real problem there. The other problem is going to come when people look hard at a couple of things like this infrastructure, this very vague, murky fund that's been pushed by General Treasurer Raimondo, I think mainly for political reasons. The DOT, the Department of Transportation, hasn't even been consulted on this yet. And that money probably should go into the pension fund, you would think, but it's not, or to cities and towns. So I don't understand how they can do that. The other is the cuts to right care. I think there's some real problems with a lot of working poor families. What they're going to do is they're proposing to cut about 6,500 people. For a family of three, that means people earning between $26,000 and $34,000 a year. Working poor salaries are going to be seeking health care, perhaps from the Obamacare new program the state will set up. But we haven't seen that yet. So you'd think a prudent General Assembly would delay this for a year until we see just what this new Obamacare program looks like.
Debate continues about whether Rodon should pay back bonds for 38 Studios. Top aides to Governor Chafee and State Treasurer Gina Raimondo say the state will suffer if it doesn't pay back the bonds. But the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, Brian Newberry, argues that not paying back the bonds will be less costly in the long run. Scott, which argument do you find more persuasive?
Well, if General Treasurer Raimondo and Governor Chafee agree on something, we probably have to listen. I think it's unfair. It's sad. And people are going to be very upset that working people in Rhode Island have to pay for this fiasco out of our taxes. But then again, the state's bond ratings, we can't throw that into jeopardy, look like the deadbeat state all around the country. This 38 Studios thing made us a laughingstock, and I'm not sure, really, if Rhode Island can default on these bonds. Hopefully, we'll recover some money from the lawsuit that we have against the financiers and some of the law firms that did this under the bidding of former Governor Don Carcieri.
David, the budget includes an initial $2.5 million payment to pay back the 38 Studios bonds, but it also has money for a study to decide whether or not this is a good thing. Why weren't these questions answered earlier in the legislative session?
I don't think legislative leaders really saw this discussion reaching the fever pitch that it has so late in the session. When this was first talked about in January and February, it was frankly, you know, some of the supporters of default were laughed at. And this really bubbled to the surface, I think, in reaction to the public outrage over the deal. And it's very understandable that these lawmakers are hearing complaints about why do we have to pay this money. I don't really think that Governor Chafee, that top legislative leaders, saw this being the big issue in the budget that it became. And I think now they're looking for answers, looking for justifications. And this $50,000 study that we're going to have presumably could get us some of those answers. One of the big problems is no one really does this. We don't really know what would happen if we were to default.
And the other side of this is, and you're right, is the lack of oversight by the General Assembly. I often thought since day one that they really didn't want their own role in this whole deal examined. I mean, this thing passed in the middle of the night, as you know. It was generic. It didn't have the name of Kurt Schilling or 38 Studios on it. But the fact is, without the legislature's connivance, this deal couldn't happen.
As usual, a number of issues have yet to be resolved as the General Assembly races toward the finish line. One of those is conflicting visions for remaking the State Economic Development Corporation. David, how do you expect this issue to be resolved?
Well, both chambers have passed relatively similar bills that would rechristen the Economic Development Corporation. They are squabbling right now and negotiating out the differences, one of which would be, should this new agency be led by a cabinet-level Secretary of Commerce? What exactly would the rules be in place to try and prevent a future 38 Studios debacle from occurring? I think it's interesting to point out, and Scott was talking about higher education earlier, our neighbor, Connecticut, recently, when they adjourned their session, passed a $1.5 billion economic development package that expands UConn. The idea is to attract high-tech jobs, research, and development. We are squabbling over what to call a state agency.
Another hanging issue is efforts to reduce gun violence. Critics of these new gun proposals say they won't do anything to reduce gun violence, and we know the gun lobby remains pretty strong on Smith Hill. Where do you see this headed, Scott?
This is another one of those issues where the public is way ahead of the State House. If you poll this in Rhode Island, you're going to find 80 or 90% of Rhode Island voters support stronger gun regulation. But again, the insider game, the lobbyists seem to control the State House, and that's what's happening here. I think it's a microcosm of what's happening nationally, particularly in states north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Another hanging issue is tolls on the Saconnet River Bridge. Some East Bay legislators are hoping to fund road and bridge maintenance through another mechanism, such as increased vehicle inspection fees. What do you see in your crystal ball with this, David?
Well, it was not discussed in this budget proposal, which seems to suggest that top lawmakers are willing to let this toll go into effect. However, the Senate president is from Newport. She might be paying that toll when she drives home from the State House. So I think it's possible we could see some movement as this session winds to a close that could prevent that toll.
Some liberal and conservative observers were united this week in their criticism of the budget process. They say it's ridiculous for legislators to be voting on billions of dollars in government spending only hours after getting the details of the budget. Scott, is there any hope for a more transparent and more deliberate process to do this?
Of course there should be, but guess what? It's never happened. It's like the mall on Christmas Eve. People should do their shopping 2 weeks before, but they don't. Like the post office on April 15th. And we've seen this forever. And I love to cite in 1907 when Theodore Francis Green first went up there as a state rep. He was a Brown professor. And he was totally, totally appalled at the way this happened. It went on a big crusade to try to change it. Well, that was 1907. Nothing's moved.
David, you spent a lot of time at the State House. What would it take to have a budget process that is a little more responsive to the public interest?
I think it would take a demand from the public. I see no reason for them to change the way they do business unless there was a heightened level of criticism from the public. I think people need to talk to their lawmakers and say, we want to know more. We want to know it earlier.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
And David Klepper from the Associated Press.
Thank you very much.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamlet, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.